Scripture says, and he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. To manage the global economy, to revive economies hit by the crisis, to avoid any deterioration of the present crisis and the greater imbalances that would result, to bring about integral and timely disarmament, food security, and peace. Boy, this is a rather broad statement. Covers everything, right? To guarantee the protection of the environment and to regulate migration, that means immigration from one country to the next. For all this, there is urgent need of a true world political authority. Obviously, it would have to have the authority to ensure compliance with its decisions from all parties. You see who said that? Figures. Well, yeah, and who does he think is going to be the world political authority?
Him.
Absolutely.
Him and his entourage or whatever.
Absolutely. So what points were covered?
Sure.
Well, he had the economy, social imbalances, migration, protection of the environment, disarmament, food security, world peace. Wow, I mean, this just kind of covers everything that's going to hit anything, anybody, right? Okay. This is another Benedict. Oh, this is Benedict XVI. Okay, the next statement is another Benedict. Benedict XVI has made clear on other occasions that his parish is the world, and that Protestant Christians specifically are children who should return to the Mother Church. Benedict XIII, in his indiction for a jubilee in A.D. 1725, called Rome the mother of all believers and the mistress of all churches, harlots like herself. And I thought that was a very interesting commentary. This is the commentary, directly from the commentary, but the parenthetical statement. I thought that was very interesting. This is the quote from which they are referring. And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, Mother of Harlots and Abominations of the Earth. This inscription being written upon her forehead is intended to show that she is not ashamed of her doctrines, but publicly professes and glories before the nations in them. Rome makes no bones about who she is and what her aims are. But we're largely ignorant of them. The world is largely ignorant of them. Joyce?
In the Philippines, they're having a problem with too many people and not enough food. And the president of the Philippines is wanting to allow birth control. And the Catholic Church has told the president that if they allow birth control, the Catholic Church will dig their grave. In other words, they will not live good. He's already threatened excommunication, and that didn't work. So now he's telling them, if you pass this, you will die.
Well, they have world control.
That was on the national news this week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You talk about one of the statements up there was also food control.
Yeah.
Did you know the United States government passing a law that's not being pushed quite yet? They can come in your house and confiscate any extra food that they can.
Yeah, there won't be any hoarding.
It's already law.
Yeah.
It's already law. It was passed earlier last year.
So you can't go and buy 6 months' worth of food and store it away someplace because they'll come get it. These things are just quietly being passed.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the majority of the country does not know about it because we have our head in the sand. We're busy watching our TV and we're, you know, playing with our whatever, you know, but we're not paying attention to what's going on around us. And this magazine, I'm making a plug. I mean, I'm a religious liberty leader. And if you don't read, I mean, liberty, if you don't have enough money to do anything else except $8 for the subscription, you know, you need to get the magazine and read it. If you've got enough money that you can assist this, there is a worldwide work going on. Your liberty money, yes, supports. In this congregation, we have 137 names on our list. And the majority of them are politicians of some sort. They need to read this magazine. so that they can see what they're doing when they go to Nashville or to Washington to represent us. They need to understand the seriousness of what they're doing here. Some of them may not care, but some of them may learn enough that it will save their soul. They'll realize what's coming down the pike. We're at war. I mean, we call it the great controversy. This is definitely a war. And in wartime, we have to learn to sacrifice, don't we? Okay, part two. How things happen so fast. I mean, we sit back and we say, well, I don't understand how this all happened. I mean, you know, this is freedom. And this is America. We don't have these kind of things in America. Well, it's like the frog in the pot. You know, you just put him in cool water and then keep turning up the heat. And before you know it, he's a boiling frog. Yeah. Anybody know anybody like this? I got at least two in my house. Most of today's society is connected. We don't know how to do anything if we're not connected to a screen or a keyboard or whatever. I mean, poor Leanne, you know, she's suffering because of that, you know. Well, if you're not on some sort of social media, nobody talks to you anymore. We used to get lots of emails. And we noticed in the last 6 months or so that we don't get any emails anymore. Or we get garbage, but I mean, we don't get anybody talking to us anymore by email. Because we don't do Twitter. We don't do Facebook. We don't do text messaging, except what we can get from Amanda. You know, so we don't do those things. You know, this instant stuff, we don't do those things. And we are definitely now a dinosaur. Because we're not going to do those things. And the world is passing us by very quickly. Just in 6 months, we have noticed that we get no emails from anybody anymore. Nobody communicates that way. They've all gone to texting on their phones. Well, when you stay busy with your nose and a screen, we say, well, I'm learning. I've got my Bible program. And see, I can, you know, and I can do it on my, you know. Well, that's fine. You can carry that around in your pocket. But remember what we put in the last newsletter about learning by digital means? You don't learn. You learn where things are, and you learn I can go there and I can look at it again, but you don't learn the information that you see on that screen. It doesn't go in the brain in the same way. You learn, and it sticks when you read, when you write. But reading from a screen is not the same way. It's just the process of visual. You know, the way a visual picture goes in your brain is different from the way a printed word goes in your brain.
Not only that, but we have an attitude. It's always going to be there. I don't have to remember it because I can always go back to it.
Well, I've got a book on the shelf, and it's always going to be there, and I can always go back to it. But it's more than that. It's the physical, chemical way of the way we learn. When you have a book open in your hand and you're reading words off a page, your brain processes those words in a different way than it does when it sees a picture on a screen. And a picture on the screen, even though its words may be there, when you read off a screen, you'll scan. Almost everybody will scan. They scan down through it. They'll skip paragraphs. They'll say, well, I already know what that means. And they just, you know, ram right through it. You don't read off a screen the same way that you do reading from a book. Yes, it does. And you pick up little words here and in there, and you say, well, that, yep, yeah, I know what that means, and you go on, you know. It's just the whole process is different. So, yeah. So, the Bible says that we're to study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth, but shun profane and vain babblings, for they will increase unto more and more ungodliness. Well, vain and profane babblings is what the world is full of these days. It spews forth out of most everything that has a screen on it, you know? It does. It spews forth out of most people's mouths because they don't know what they're talking about. People just like to talk. We have plenty to say, but it doesn't mean anything. Ellen White said, by the decree enforcing the institution of the papacy in violation of the law of God, our nation will disconnect herself fully from righteousness when Protestantism, so-called, shall stretch her hand across the gulf to grasp the hand of the Roman power, when she shall reach over the abyss to clasp hands with spiritualism, Now, there was a very significant document that was signed. It wasn't a law, but it was signed in 1994, called Evangelicals and Catholics Together. Anybody ever heard of that? You ever look at it? It's available online if you want to go look at it. Speaking of going online and not looking at things, it is a useful thing for finding stuff because there's lots of stuff out there. But the signing of this, when the Protestants and Catholics got together, it in essence overturned the Protestant Reformation. Because the Catholics and the so-called Protestants said, oh, well, we can agree on all these things, and these other things that we can't agree on are just minor. Now, what was it that Benedict says he was trying to do? He was trying to get those separated daughters back in the fold. Well, Evangelicals and Catholics Together was a very major step towards accomplishing that. But there's more to it. It says here that when Protestantism shall... It's a threefold thing. Protestantism shall stretch her hand across the gulf to grasp the hand of the Roman power, when she shall reach over the abyss to clasp hands with spiritualism. So this is Protestantism reaching out to spiritualism. When under the influence of this threefold union, our country shall repudiate every principle of its constitution as a Protestant and Republican nation. We're seeing every principle of the Constitution going down the tube. And shall make provision for the propagation of papal falsehoods and delusions. It's more than just Sabbath and Sunday issue. Then we may know that the time has come for the marvelous working of Satan and the end is near. Occultism in various ways, but especially through spiritism, will play a major role in the final worldwide deception. This movement will draw together every form of religious culture with the avowed objective of building a world government headed by a world church. What did we just read from the two Benedicts? Okay, so this author, Roy Allen Anderson, he is obviously making a distinction between occultism and spiritism. It's like spiritism is a part of occultism, but occultism is a bigger thing. So, what is it? Occultism, the belief in or study of the action or influence of the supernatural or supernormal powers. Do we believe in supernatural? Do we? You're sure? Well, then what does supernatural mean? I don't know. It's the correct definition. Supernatural means of or relating to an order of existence beyond the visible observable universe, especially of or relating to God or a god, a demigod, a spirit, or a devil. Well, it's still supernatural. It's outside of what we can see and touch and feel and handle. Yeah. Okay, so how does spiritism affect us in the world? This list is not necessarily in any kind of order. I was just, as I was making up these slides, just things came in my head. So it's not order of importance. It's just, this is a list, okay? Evolution. That has invaded our society, our culture, around the world. It confuses people over who God is, doesn't it? Even Christians are confused about who God is because they believe in theistic evolution. The Catholic Church is promoting theistic evolution, which means that God kind of got things going, and then he just kind of stood back and let processes happen, and yes, it can take long millennia for it to take place. Okay. Ecology is earth worship. Well, you know, this is really more than just the tree huggers that are out there won't let you cut down some of these redwoods. I mean, if you have the idea that the earth is some entity that we must protect, Mother Earth, Gaia, if you have any kind of a notion about this, that there's something inherently wonderful and good in a tree or whatever, then you're involved in spiritism. Mm-hmm. Openness of God theory. Anybody heard about this? Know what it means? It's a big deal in the world today, in America. Anybody got a definition for it? No?
He accepts everything?
Do what?
Everything's okay?
No. This is discussing God and his nature and his character. The openness of God theory says that God does not know everything. He is open to learning. He knows every option that's out there that you may take, but he doesn't know which option you're going to take until you take it. Is God omnipotent or not? This does not claim that God is omnipotent. He knows every option. He knows every temptation that you're going to face. He knows every option that is available for your choices under those temptations. But until you make your choice, he does not know which choice you're going to make. And they stand on this and they say, well, that's because he gave us free will. And because he gave us free will, he doesn't know which choice we're going to make. Yeah. You know where this came from? Ever heard of a man named Richard Rice? He's a professor. He wrote a book. His textbook is used in freshman Adventist theology. If you go to an Adventist college and you take freshman theology, which every freshman has to take, you will read Richard Rice's information. It's in a footnote, but it's there. Richard Rice has promoted this theory so carefully that the evangelicals have picked it up from him, and now the evangelicals are teaching it. Two evangelicals named John Sanford and Clark Pinnock have picked this up and gone on and written books on this subject. It has become a very big deal in the evangelical world. But the evangelicals don't necessarily like it because Clark Pinnock and John Sanders were nearly thrown out of the Evangelical Theological Society because of their promotion of this. But the Adventists are doing nothing about it. It's in our textbooks. We have talked to Adventists, good friends of ours, who believe this, and they argued with me and said that this cannot be true. If we say that God knows everything that's going to happen, then he's taking away our free will. It's predetermination, and we refuse predetermination. It's very tricky. What is predestination?
No, you said predetermination. Isn't the word predestination?
Same thing. God has predetermined what you're going to do. You're predestined to do it. Same thing. This is serious. You may not have heard about it, but lots of people believe it. The idea that mankind and all of creation is inherently good, this goes back to the ecology notion. Mm-hmm. That there's goodness in everything and everybody. There's no such thing as evil. Yeah. Supernatural energy that inhabits and emits from all things, an aura or a ki. And scientists claim that they can pick this up. They can detect it through some sort of, you know, digital means. 100 years ago, there was a theory that if you stretched a membrane over the top of a tube and set that tube over a piece of glass that had some sort of etching material on it, you know, ink or something, if you spoke like leaf or tree, the word spoken would etch out a picture that looked like the leaf or the tree. When I was a kid, I remember my grandfather had a book that had a picture in it, and I mean, the picture's still very close, clearly in my mind. There was this doctor who claimed that at the point of death, at the very point of death, there was an essence that left the body, and it could be photographed. And the picture was of somebody laying on a table at the point of death, and there was this little hazy thing that you could see coming up off this body. People believe these things. People believe that there is an energy that it emits out of you that can be felt by things around you. It's what? The aura, yeah. That's right. So I've got some other things on here, but massage therapy, you know, and this ki or kai, it's pronounced both ways. That's this energy thing that they say is in your body, and it runs along these little channels called meridians, and you manipulate it through massage, or you manipulate it through your whatever. That's my screen on down here. It's not, maybe not the next screen, but whatever. I got that up here, too. So we got yoga, tai chi, martial arts like taekwondo and jiu-jitsu. You know, tai chi is being taught as an exercise form that's a very gentle exercise form. You stand here and you live, you know, and you stand on one leg and you do the ibis and, you know, whatever. It's all based into spiritualism, that what you're doing in this exercise thing is that you are manipulating the energy fields and the energy levels that's in your body by what you do.
And then he will say some funny things, and then at one point he will say, pray to the sensei. And that time I was small, I was about 15. I thought, pray to him. You know? Mm-hmm. And from there I realized this thing has spiritualism in it.
That's right.
And I stopped.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Guided imagery. Anybody heard of that? Yeah. And the healing therapeutic touch? About 10 years ago, maybe a little more, 12 years ago, the AJN, American Journal of Nursing, and the American Nurses Association began promoting therapeutic touch. They wanted nurses to learn therapeutic touch because you could relieve pain. You don't touch the patient. You have your hands over the top of the patient wherever the pain sensation is, and you're like that far above the patient, but you can feel this energy. And you can remove that energy that's causing the pain. You can take it into yourself.
I did that many times, and then I stopped. I said, you know, when I asked them to explain to me what's really happening scientifically, they couldn't explain.
That's right.
But I will go over, I could go over and she don't know I'm behind her, and I will pass my hand slowly, but you have to be in deep concentration, you know, tuning. And then I will feel at a certain spot, I would feel like extra heat coming on my hand. I said, so I tried over and over, and when I reach on that spot, Sister Anne will know. And she will say, ah. And I would get down in that area and start massaging it. So I tried to ask them what really happened scientifically, but they don't know. So I don't do that period again anymore.
That's right. But you're smart. You know, there are many other people who don't pick up on this being spiritualism.
Right.
They don't realize what it is, Joyce.
And there are many people who say, but it works.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
If it takes the pain away, then why shouldn't we do it?
That's right.
And that goes right back to the Sabbath. You do it because God says, this is right and this is wrong.
That's right.
That's what makes
going back to you saying that she's smart, it's more than that. It's not me, it's not that she's smart, it's that she has her mind open.
That's what I mean by smart.
Okay.
You know, she's willing to evaluate these things.
Right.
She's willing to say, well, this might work, and I can feel this. I literally can feel that sensation, but what's the source? Because Satan can do things.
Right.
He is doing things. Not will do, he is doing things.
Right. He can make sickness.
Yes. And he can give Maxine that sensation on her hand because her mind is open, or was opened, to what he had to, that he could do through her.
Spiritualism is spiritualism. No matter what you're looking at.
That's exactly right.
And it
all comes
real.
From the same place.
It's very real.
People think, well, if it's real, then it's not spiritualism, because spiritualism is hocus pocus.
No.
Well, spiritualism is real.
Yes. Okay, reincarnation or eternal soul. That doesn't even need discussing, I hope, in this congregation. But there are, the vast majority of the population believes in one form or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing. If you don't want to call it reincarnation, you think that when you die you go to heaven or hell. It's the same notion.
That's just wrong understanding of the state of
yes. Okay. Freemasonry and other secret societies. You know, they all use the occult?
Mm-hmm.
You talk to any Freemason that you know, he's going to have the special handshake that he's got. They have rituals that they go through that access the occult. They pray to a god that is not God. My father and grandfather were both 32nd degree Masons. They were one step from the top. Guided imagery, this is just a definition from a website that is preaching this stuff. Guided imagery is a gentle but powerful technique that focuses and directs the imagination because it is a right-brained activity, and there's a great deal of discussion about right brain, left brain among people. Oh, I'm a right brain or you're a left brain and we don't get along. Because it is a right-brained activity, engaging in it will often be accompanied by other functions that reside in that vicinity, such as emotion, laughter, sensitivity to music, openness to spirituality, intuition, abstract thinking, and empathy. So all those things sound good, right? We want to have our spirituality enhanced. We want to have intuition so that we can read somebody else's needs and you know, empathize with them. We want those things. Aren't they all good things?
Used the right way. Guided by the right mind.
Yeah. Well, this guided imagery is used by everything from a athlete, you know, like a diver standing on the edge of the jumping on the board there, and he's ready to dive. Well, he's going to focus, so he focuses himself. He uses this guided imagery just before he does his. You know, it may just be 10 seconds. It may be longer than that. They use guided imagery to deal with pain. They use guided imagery to deal with blood pressure problems. Medical practitioners are trained in. You know, some medical practitioners are trained in these things. And you go and you're under their care and you don't know what they're doing to you when they do these things. Oh, well, let's just try this. When I was in nursing school, one of the teachers got into, they were just getting into biofeedback. It was new and they were testing it out at VA in Murfreesboro. Well, she went there to be a guinea pig, but she came back and was talking about how wonderful this was. Her blood pressure now is under control because she could control it. She could see her inner self and she could bring her, you know. And she was talking about this to us as nursing students because it's related to this key that we talked about. And there's obviously a blockage here. We have crystal formations and this blockage has come up and we have to break up that blockage so the key can flow, so that energy can go where it wants to go without obstruction. There's no such thing as a meridian in your body. It is not your nerves. It isn't there. That's right. Chiropractic, kinesiology uses the same pathway, they claim, this key. Iridology, they look in your eyes and they say, oh, yes, I can look deep in your eyes and I can see that you have gallbladder problems. Herbal therapies, do we believe in herbal therapies? Yes. God has given us herbs for healing. And there are chemical properties, verifiable chemical properties in the herbs that will do things to us to help us be well. That's true. But that's not what New Age herbal therapy is all about. New Age herbal therapy is accessing the energy that is in those herbs. This unknowable thing that's in the herbs. Homeopathy. You've heard of homeopathy? You know this little bottle of stuff that you buy? If you take it and you analyze it chemically, it is nothing but distilled water. It's what?
They're supposed to be tinctures of something.
Tincture of something, but there's nothing in it. Absolutely nothing in it. And it, the higher the X amount on it, you know, you got 10X and you got 100X, the higher the X, the less likely there's going to be even a single molecule of whatever they started out with. They put the product in the water. Then they have a series of things that they slap it around and they, you know, they shake it and they do all this kind of stuff. And then they dilute it again. And they go through this process and then they dilute it again. And they continue to dilute it until there's not even a single molecule of whatever they started out with. You have nothing but distilled water. But what they are doing is extracting the essence away from whatever it is. And the more they dilute it, the stronger the essence gets. Now, does that even make logical sense? No. Let's be thinking people here, you know. If you keep diluting it, pretty soon there's nothing left, right? Well, that's what they do. But they sell this stuff as being more strong than the herb that you started out with because the essence has been concentrated. Acupuncture and acupressure. There were a couple of doctors over here at the hospital, medically trained doctors. They were MDs that would use acupressure and acupuncture in the ER. Made me very nervous. I didn't like to see them do this. He carried his little kit of needles. And he would ask the person, you know, can I do this? And they'd say, well, yeah, I don't know what you're doing. Okay. Well, he came in with little needles and put it in. Well, is your headache getting better? Well, I don't know. What are you doing down there? Oh, well. Crystal therapy. This was a big deal. I don't know if it still is, but crystal therapy was a big deal at Collegedale not too many years ago. I think Gerald said that he even saw people in the ABC, not the ABC, the village market down there, swinging their crystals trying to determine which fruit and vegetables to pick up. Spiritualism. Food combining for balance. This is another thing that deals with, you know, we've got this energy thing here that we've got to make sure that the energy isn't going to fight with itself, so we have to be careful what we eat when and what we eat with what. New Age. Now, all of these broadly come under New Age. You know, New Age is kind of a catch-all term. It's not just something that singing the Age of Aquarius songs, you know, I mean, it's bigger than that. It's also not new. No, it goes right back to the Garden of Eden. New Age ideology in TV, movies, music, literature, there's probably nothing you can pick up that doesn't have some form of New Age in it. You can't even watch a Walt Disney children's movie that's rated G that doesn't have some form of spiritualism in it. That's right. Yes, that's rated G. Or no rating, because they think it's absolutely non-noxious. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. Let all the kids watch it. Feminism and the worship of the goddess of wisdom, Sophia. Did you realize that feminism and the root of feminism was based on Sophia? So if you're a feminist and you are you're striving for change in the world based on the feminist principles, that's spiritualism. Is seeking to overturn God-given order of things. And it, you remember the Da Vinci movies, the Da Vinci Code movies that came out a few years ago in the book? That was all about the divine feminist. It wasn't just this story about Jesus supposedly married Mary Magdalene and they had a child, and on down through the generations, that, you know, this child, this woman that was in the movie, you know, she was the descendant of this union of between Jesus and Mary Magdalene. It's more than that. It's witchcraft. Self-help programs like AA that promote a connection to the higher being inside us all. AA sounds good. It's a group. It's going to get you together. You're going to overcome your cigarettes, or your alcohol, or your, you know, whatever. You know, it sounds good. But it isn't. Because when you are in there, they're telling you that you can do this. It's part of their 12 steps. You can do this. The God within is going to give you the power. Just tap into that power. No, not necessarily.
You know how, you know, God is within us.
Well, see, that's tricky. I know. I mean, doesn't the Bible say Christ in you, the hope of glory?
So they're kind of just not exactly saying what we would say, but trying to say.
Use the same words. That's why it's so tricky. You know the pizzas that you get around the quick places. You know, the Hunt pizzas. You know what I mean. The Hunt pizza is the brand name, and you go in like Quick and Easy, or you go in a little gas station, and they'll make you a pizza, right? All toppings are free. You know, you've seen the things. They're everywhere. Yes, you have, Joyce. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. I mean, just there's probably three of them over here in Carthage, at least. Anyway. You buy gas? These places are sold in places that sell gas. Well, anyway, on the box, it says there's this little New Age phrase. Mm-hmm. Power within you is greater than whatever. That's what it's tapping into, is this power, this New Age concept of God. So I'm talking about the real God. Okay, but anyway, AA, they don't claim, because they claim not to be a Christian organization. A lot of them function within churches, but they do not claim to be promoting the God of the universe. They're promoting that God within us. That power within us that we can tap into and find the strength within us without God to overcome whatever these problems are. pagan Easter holidays such as pagan Christian holidays such as Easter and Christmas and Halloween. We all know where these things came from. You know, Halloween, Hallow Eve is what it's hallowed, All Saints Eve, you know, because November 1st is All Saints Day. So All Hallows Eve was the day that the spirits were let out of purgatory. And they let the spirits out of purgatory, and they were on their way to going to heaven or hell, but they got out of purgatory. On the way, on All Hallows Eve, they were allowed to do all manner of things, whatever they wanted to. They could come back and they could trick the people who had been bad to them in their former life. They could treat or give blessings to people who had been good to them in their former life. And this was all done on October 31st at night. Purely Catholic. That's where it came from. Has nothing to do with Christianity. Twelve-step programs, often the bearers of a great good from the viewpoint of obvious human need, are currently doing much to place anti-Christian, or at least a Christian, means without Christ, spirituality solidly in the midst of Christian congregations and lives. You may go to a church for their 12-step program, and you'll think that you're being exposed to Christianity because it's inside of a church building, but you're not learning about the God of the Bible. New Age is holistic in a number of senses. It wants to see the removal of all boundaries in the world, religious and national, and it wants to bring mind, body, and spirit together in a whole person concept of the individual. There is a longing to be in touch with powerful forces in the universe, excluded or condemned by the Judeo-Christian tradition. You've all heard about a new world order, and we think of it in political terms. It's really spiritual. Because once you can control the spiritual thinking of people, politics will follow very rapidly.
The leaders in these New World Order are New Age in mind, body, and spirit.
Absolutely. They want the whole person. This so-called New Age is promoted in schools through humanistic worldview. It's promoted in modern psychology. Religions of all kinds, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, you know, Islam is a spiritist religion. Mormonism, very spiritist religion. Jehovah's Witnesses, Theosophy, Wiccan, of course. Politics, the media, you name it. Everything's promoting some form of spiritualism. Humanism plus supernatural power becomes New Age. Hinduism plus pop psychology becomes New Age. Pantheism plus confidence in human potential becomes New Age. That's the AA concept. It's really the God within you, or the God whatever, this higher power. That's really pantheism. Even crossless Christianity itself fits if we subtract its heart, Jesus Christ and his atonement, and then add some Eastern mysticism. Now we see this, it's very serious, coming into Christian churches, evangelical churches primarily, but Adventist churches are also sucking it up. Such things as spiritual disciplines and those sort of practices. Small cell groups. They started pushing small cell groups 25 years ago. The small cell group idea is straight out of Vatican II. It's a means of controlling the congregation. You take especially a large congregation, you break it up into little groups of no more than 15.
12, you knew what they said.
Do what?
12.
Yeah, 12 to 15. Mm-hmm. And they have a leader. That leader is responsible for everybody that's under him. That leader then has a hierarchy. He is accountable to the next person up and then finally to the pastor of the church. In the cell groups, the way the cell groups work, that cell leader is responsible for what you do with everything. How you study your Bible, whether or not you attend church, what your checkbook does to make sure that you send money into the church appropriately. So they have access to your checkbook. It can be very invasive in your life if full cell group thing is followed. Joyce?
I don't
Do what?
I don't understand D.
D, crossless Christianity. Okay. Things like fasting, meditation. You understand what spiritual disciplines are? Spiritual discipline sounds like a good thing, right? We should read our Bible every day. We should study. We should pray. It's not the object, it's the method.
So crossless Christianity means doing things that don't focus on the cross?
It means that you don't need the cross of Christ. Crossless Christianity subtracts Christ and his atonement.
Okay.
We can do it.
Okay.
You can work your way to heaven by the things that you do. Okay, I don't know when the last time you was. You was. That's good English. I don't know the last time you was in ABC. But you might have noticed, laying on a table there next to, or on the shelf next to Steps to Christ, you might have noticed this little book called Christian Secret to a Happy Life. You ever seen that? It was written by a woman named Hannah Whittall Smith. It's called and promoted through the ABCs as a companion to Steps to Christ. They want you to read Steps to Christ and then read Hannah Whittall Smith's book. Don't do it. Hannah Whittall Smith's book is full of mystical thinking, Catholic mystical thinking. She gives credit to a Catholic mystic as where she learned her notions about how you experience God and how you study the Bible and you learn. And, you know, it's mystical. It's not based in Scripture. Sounds good when you read through it. Oh, it just gets you all filled and happy and joyful and warm inside. But it's not a companion to Steps to Christ. Spiritual formation exercises. Okay, spiritual formation sounds good. It sounds like it's something that we want to do. We want to be able to read and study our Bible more. We want to pray more. We want to do these things. Yes, we should want to do those things. But if it's done in a mindless, I'm tapping into this energy kind of notion, it's wrong. The notion of spiritual formation came from the mind of a man named Ignatius Loyola. Ever heard of him? He's the father of the Jesuits. And he was sick, very sick, to the point of death. While he was sick, he had visions. From those visions, he wrote a book that was called Spiritual Exercises, published in 1548. That book is the book that they use to train Jesuit priests, members of the Jesuit order. The instruction book would, in the words of Loyola, create a man who functioned like a well-disciplined corpse. That's his phrase, well-disciplined corpse. When you went through his spiritual exercises, you would do what your superior told you to do. If your superior said, this thing is black when it was really white, you would say, yes, you're right. It is mindless. That's what I'm talking about. This sort of meditation, this sort of study, this sort of tapping into these higher powers is absolutely mindless. And we need to avoid it. It opens the mind to the power of Satan. Prayer walks. Labyrinth meditation. If you've seen the labyrinths that are out, you know, where you walk along this thing, and as you walk, you meditate. This is supposed to be Christian. Cell groups, we already talked about them. Celebration style worship opens the mind to Satan because it bypasses your thinking brain when you hear that kind of music and you're in that kind of attitude with this hyped up hands in the air, whatever. Rock and roll kind of concepts. Even if they use the word Jesus and God frequently in what they're saying, it is bypassing your thinking and influencing a lower level of your being. Drama, skits is worship. So how does it work? This is the tricky part. It's very easy. What I'm going to talk about here is how you subvert a nation. But this technique has been used on smaller groups. It can also be used in businesses. And it works. The smaller the group, the quicker it works. You change perception of reality over time. Uses a slow process divided into four steps. Generally, it takes about three generations to bring about a full change, but not necessarily. Like I said, if you use it in a business or a smaller group, you can get through it much quicker because the turnover is faster. Demoralization takes 15 to 20 years. It takes 15 to 20 years to demoralize a nation because that's what it takes to educate a generation of students to accept a new idea. Now, when I was in college first time around, I had a world history class. And the man that was teaching that world history class spoke more about communism than he did anything else. I finally quit going to that class. I missed 17 straight days in a row and was called into the dean's office, and the dean said, why are you not going to school? Why are you not attending this class? I went to everything else, but I wouldn't go to that class. I said, because I refuse to sit in his classroom and listen to him preach communism. Yes, I was a flippant teenager, but we need to make those kind of stands. We need to say, I'm not putting up with this. I will not hear these things. I will not accept those things. They are contrary to the word of God. I'm not doing it. I will not entertain those notions. Because as you entertain them, your thinking is changed and your worldview becomes rearranged. It's done without being challenged or counterbalanced by the teaching of basic Christian moral values. That's what's happened in this country. It has already happened in this country. Just consider evolution. Evolution didn't always be taught in schools. And I remember sitting in my seventh grade class, and my science teacher brought out a book called The Sea Around Us. And she read to us out of that book every session. She was teaching us evolution. I had never heard the concept of evolution before that day. But I enjoyed the book. It was wonderful to read about all that was in the ocean and how things came about, and, you know, very scientifically presented that, you know, all these things just crept out of the sea and then, you know, evolved over time. And, you know, it sounded good. But that's how we infiltrate. And I was, you know, on the cutting edge of this new generation that was going to get these things. At the same time, they said, you can't read your Bible to open up homeroom. You can't say a prayer over the intercom. So there was no counterbalance to what was being taught. This happens American to American and Christian to Christian. Joyce told me this week about a Christian friend who went with another Christian friend and tried her best to instill new thinking about God and the Bible. Isn't that right? So it happens Christian to Christian. These people get a new notion in their brain and they try to instill it in every other mind that they come in contact with. And because it comes from somebody that you trust, you're more likely to believe it. You're more likely to question your own values. This has spread like wildfire in this country because our spiritual immune system is weak. We don't spend enough true time in the Bible studying the Word of God. Exposure to truth after a person has been demoralized, and it doesn't mean necessarily that your morals are gone, that you're going to be out there doing wicked things. You're demoralized in that your worldview has been changed away from the... Yes. So, once a person has been demoralized, you've lost your path. You've lost your compass. And exposure to true information does not matter anymore because a person who is demoralized is unable to assess the information or process the facts. Even when given absolutely truthful information about whatever it is, the person will refuse to believe it. This is the way brainwashing works. Remember Patty Hearst? When they brainwashed Patty Hearst. When she got out of that situation, she was so brainwashed that she couldn't believe the reality of what it was. And it took her a long time, if she ever got out of it. Your brain, unless there's damage in your brain, everything from the first thing that you would experience when you came out of the womb, everything is still in your brain. Every song you ever heard, every word you ever heard spoken, every page you've ever read is still in your brain. With injury, you may not be able to access certain parts of your brain. And with working to ignore or to put down and to overcome, you can, you know, bypass those things that want to get to you. You can say, no, I don't believe that anymore. And you can say, you know, and you can put in information that overrides the bad things that you've learned. But it's still there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not saying it's not, it's gone, but you've got to work at it hard.
That's why
yes.
We're told to guard the avenues of our mind.
That's exactly right.
We don't want anything in there.
Right.
I mean, I've told you that, you know, I hate Walmart. But when I go in Walmart, you know, occasionally when I go in Walmart, you know, they're playing some kind of rock and roll music, and it's usually something that was back from when I was a teenager. I hear just two notes of that song. I can sing the whole song, and I sing it the rest of the day or for days after that. I can't get it out of my head. you know, you just hear two or three notes, and everything that you played your mind with for all those years, it comes right back. Destabilization is the next step. To destabilize a nation takes 3 to 5 years. You've already got them demoralized because you've got them to where they don't believe in what they used to believe in. And we saw that in this country through beginning in the 50s and 60s, or 60s primarily, with the hippie movement and the feminism that came in. And it completely turned our society upside down. And now, things that were an affront to sensible people in the 60s are everywhere. We don't think anything of them. Okay, so after you've demoralized, you have destabilization. This takes 3 to 5 years. If it affects the things that matter, like the economy, foreign relations, financial system. Have we seen these things going on in the world? Just look at the reports coming out of Europe. It is destabilizing the world economy. It is destabilizing Europe, and it's destabilizing America. These things have already happened. When this is completed, the next step in the process is crisis. And we think we've already had an economic crisis in this country. Not yet. We think there's a crisis in Europe. It's bad, but not yet. This takes about 6 weeks to change the power and the governmental structure once the free market crisis has hit. Greece is very nearly to that point. The economy is destabilized, which leads to the critical emergency measures, like the passage of this, or the utilization of this bill that was put in place at the beginning of our discussion here, to bring things back to a normal pattern, because you can't live in a crisis mode very long. Normalization, then, is the final phase. This is a cynical term used by the conqueror to mean that he has taken control of the government and the economy under the new ideology. You know that the Pope, the current Pope, has said that he would let the church bail out the financial problems of the world. And they've got plenty of money, they could do it. Do what? Oh, yeah. More so than we already are.
Yeah.
The new ideology. Now, see, when this normalization, it's a funny term, because it doesn't mean normal as in that you go back to like it used to be.
Right.
It means that you have no more crisis.
Right.
It's a new normal.
They want you to believe things are normal.
Yeah. At this point, I think this may come into play. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so cometh as the thief in the night, for when they shall say peace and safety, and there's going to come a time when they say peace and safety. We've got terrible crisis, but there's coming a time when there's going to be peace and safety, we're going to think. Then sudden destruction comes upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. So there will be a terrible crisis, and then there will appear to be peace and safety. Yeah. At the heart of this current culture war is a clash of worldviews. That's what we've been talking about here all morning. Revelation's worldview reminds us that the preaching of the gospel is not merely the transference of knowledge or a change in behavior, but bringing about a personal conversion. Worldview transformation is at the heart of what it means to experience biblical conversion. You no longer believe the things of the world. You no longer buy into any of Satan's things that he's trying to push. You refuse to accept those things as reality. They're real, but they are not real. You know, they are real. They are in the world. They are whatever. They are influencing the world, but they are not reality according to God. It's a wrong worldview. And if we don't have the biblical worldview wherein we live our lives according to Scripture and according to God's will, and we're living a wrong worldview. I've told the girls over here at the jail that I wanted to change their worldview, because they have lived so long with drugs, with illicit sex, with lying, that they think nothing of lying, stealing, think nothing of it, even little things. when we were finishing up a session over there, and one of the girls who works in the jail had stuffed something out of the kitchen in her pocket, and she got together as we got together for our final prayer, and she leaned forward and she goes like this, because there's a deputy over there watching what's going on. Two other girls came up and picked up something out of her pocket that were little snacks to eat, kept it in their own pockets, stealing. Think nothing of it. They're in jail and they're still stealing because their worldview's wrong. The only thing I'm pushy about is I don't want to be pushed. I don't want to change others, and I don't want to debate my view. Now, we all run into people like this. And if you run into people that won't even let you debate their view or won't listen to you talk about your view, what hope is there for evangelism? Not much. The real dirty little secret of religiosity in America is that there are so many people for whom spiritual interest, thinking about ultimate things, is minimal. Well, now, actually, if you talk to most people on the street, they'll tell you that they're spiritual. Oh, yeah, I'm a spiritual person. That's right. What they mean is that I can access God in a multitude of ways. I don't necessarily need to go sit in a pew.
Or I believe God's in me.
I believe that God is in me. I'm a spiritual person. We live in a society today where it is acceptable now to say that they have no spiritual curiosity. At almost any other time in history, that would have been unacceptable. There was a statement that I was going to make, and I forgot all about it. You know, we used to be a literate society. We're fast becoming illiterate. It used to be, even up to the 1900s, most people could not read or write. They weren't considered stupid. It was just the norm. It was only when we got public education system and the law said that kids had to go to school that we finally got a society that was totally educated and everybody could read and write. Well, now we're going the other direction. We only had this literate society for about 100 years. And now we're going the other direction, and we're becoming an illiterate society. Most any teacher in school will tell you that the students graduate from high school and can barely read. And why is that? Well, because they use texting where you don't even have to spell words right. They don't want you to spell words right.
You can speak into the phone now.
Whatever.
You don't have to spell anything. You just speak on the phone and it sends the text.
Okay, but they don't speak English correctly either. You know, I mean, we are an illiterate society. The more illiterate you become, the more picture-based you become, the more pagan you become.
Mm-hmm. And the more controllable you become.
That's right, because you don't use the higher processes of your brain.
Now remember, this is not just America, though.
No, it's everywhere.
Germany and Switzerland and Turkey and,
yes.
And everywhere.
Yes.
Exact same thing.
Personal experience, personal authority matter most. Hence, scripture and tradition are quaint, irrelevant artifacts. Instead of followers of Jesus, they're followers of 5,000 unseen friends on Facebook and Twitter.
There you go.
And personal is the key. I want, and I want it now. 44% told a 2011 Baylor University religion survey they spent no time seeking eternal wisdom. They're not going to be prepared when this mark of the beast comes. 19% said it's useless to search for meaning. 46% told a 2011 survey by the Nashville-based evangelical research agency, Lifeway Research, and that's Baptist, they're the ones that have the Lifeway bookstores, that they never wonder whether they'll go to heaven. Do you wonder whether you're going to go to heaven? I don't wonder about it. I know I'm going. I don't need to wonder about it anymore. 28% told Lifeway that it's not a major priority in my life to find my deeper purpose. Now, the day is going to come when we will be picked up for being Christians. Because we're Seventh-day Adventists, and we're not going to go along with the scheme of things. When you're arrested, and they put you on trial, however they try you, is there going to be enough evidence to convict you? You know, we claim to be Christians. Is there enough evidence in the way you live your life and the way you talk and the way you interact with people? Is there enough evidence there that people would say, yes, she's definitely a Seventh-day Adventist Christian? She definitely knows her Bible. She definitely follows the will of God. When the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? Jesus is concerned. He's the one that said this. He's concerned whether or not he will find faith when he comes back. And it's not because faith hasn't been given as a measure to every man and woman and child, but because we've wasted it. We've squandered it. Next time, and I didn't even read you what I wanted to read you. Turn the light on. I want to read something here. What is it? It is an old book, 1897. No, you can't borrow it. Lincoln, Nebraska, February 19th, 1897. This is General Conference Bulletin from the General Conference that took place in Lincoln, Nebraska in 1897. The man I'm reading from, this sermon, is John Harvey Kellogg. And he's talking about that energy that resides in things. And he said, it is difficult to form a conception of the mighty power manifested in the operations of nature taking place silently around us. Take, for example, a snowball, weighing perhaps a half a pound, which a boy makes up with his hands and can throw a few rods. The power, the energy, wrapped up in that snowball, that is, the power exerted by the sunbeam by evaporating the water and raising it up into the air and then bringing it back to the earth again, is sufficient to propel the ball nearly 150 miles. While the power exerted in holding together the gases, the hydrogen and oxygen composing the water of which the snowball is made, used to propel that ball would carry it a distance of 1,500 miles. This power is all derived from the sun, is brought to us through the light of the sun. We find another illustration in the light shining upon us through electric lamps. Ages ago, sunlight, falling upon the green leaves of the trees of the mighty forest, decomposed the carbonic acid gas in the air, retaining the carbon and sending the oxygen back into the air for the animals to breathe, and thus built up a gigantic forest which, buried into the earth, were converted into coal. This coal is simply the force of the sunbeam crystallized. When buried in the furnace, the force passes into steam. The steam drives the engine. The engine turns the dynamo. The dynamo produces electricity. The electricity produces a light, which is nothing more or less than the resuscitated or resurrected sunlight, which lay idle in buried coal fields for hundreds of years. Then he goes on talking about this mystery in other ways, and he says scientists are now very puzzled about how light works. The mystery of being, even in its simplest forms, is an eternal mystery. He's still talking about this energy. Scientists cannot solve it, for it is a mystery of God himself. What a wonderful thought that this mighty God that keeps the whole universe in order is in us. And what an astonishing thing that any man should dare to rebel against this mighty God, to assert his own will in opposition to God's will. And what an amazing thing that this almighty, all-powerful, all-wise God should make himself a servant of man by giving man a free will. Now we get back to the openness of God theology. God is servant to your free will. He doesn't know how to control your free will. He went on and on and on and on with this. Now, my friends, when we look at the fact that man is the masterpiece of God, that when God made him, he pronounced him very good, and after he had made everything else, the earth, the world, the animals, everything, he said to his son, let us make man in our own image. When we think of that God has taken clay and animated that clay and put into that clay his own self and put himself into it so that he has made in a mass of clay, a God-like man absolutely put divinity in the earth and has given man a will and has made himself a servant of that will, we see that God is man's servant.
No wonder she called it the Alpha.
Do what?
No wonder she called it the Alpha.
Absolutely. This is only a little bit of it. He went on for days promoting this. And it was so pervasive, it sounded so good, that he got many of the leadership of our church accepting this panentheistic notion of God being in everything. And that's nothing but New Age. Many years ago, when Sunshine Grocery Store, I remember Sunshine Grocery Store in Nashville, they had magazines that they sold. Well, it was a magazine that had a cover article about John Harvey Kellogg. He's a New Age guru.